Hey, hello everybody. Welcome back. Okay, so we're now at a point where, well, I'll say that in a second. So what we just did was we talked about how the communal fasts affects the people in the Mishmar, the people who are in Jerusalem, but not necessarily in the temple at the time, the priests, and how that impacts the Beit Av, the people who are actually serving in the temple on that day. We talked about this whole structure of the 24 watches, the Mishmarot, and the under each there was a bunch of Batei Av families, and each Beit Av took one day service in the temple, and each Mishmar took a week, meant they were there multiple weeks. There were some weeks where everyone was there. Like Sukkot, everyone was at the temple because Sukkot was a packed time. They actually could use all the extra bodies. So yeah, and Pesach probably also. So that we talked about that, and then we sort of had these more general rules about the Mishmar, and we talked about the Ma'amad, who is the lay people who correspond to the Mishmar. That's sort of a way of getting lay people involved in the temple. And now we've sort of finished that topic. We're now going to move on instead to sort of like the parameters around which one should decree these fasts. Now, we've talked about these fasts. They have this sort of escalating structure. So, you know, starts off with the individuals, goes on to three lower level fasts, then starts three upper level fasts, and then seven highest level fasts. So once we have all this structure of what to do, it's worth knowing sort of some of the parameters around declaring communal fasts. And that's what we're going to spend the next few Mishnayot doing. And then eventually we're going to come back to that's what we're going to spend the next mission doing. So the end of this chapter, the beginning of the next chapter, that's what we'll be doing. Okay. So the first thing needs to be explained is they're referring to a text in this Mishnah, in Mishnah 8 here, or a text which is called Megillat Tanit, which makes sense to be talked about in a Masechet about fasting. And Megillat Tanit is actually one of the oldest, among the older Jewish texts we have, especially in from the Second Temple period. In Aramaic. So I'm going to paste a link to Megillat Tanit. I'm going to go here. You can actually find it on Safari. Very exciting. Megillat Tanit is in both an incredibly fascinating and incredibly dull book. It's extremely short. Literally, this title tells you what it's all about. Healing your Maya Dalal Hit Anabahon, Umiksaton Dalal Misbadbahon. These are the days where you're not allowed to fast, and some of those days you're also not allowed to have a funeral. That's literally what it is. It goes through the days of the year, month by month, and explains, and just says, here's a day where you shouldn't fast, or here's a day where you shouldn't have a funeral, or something like that. This seems to be a constraint on individual fasts, or maybe communal fasts, hard to know exactly. That's the Megillat Tanit. Megillat Tanit is an Aramaic. It's very short, just literally a list of days. And in Safaria, you can see it's bolded in this nice bold font here. On Safaria, you'll also see there's a whole bunch of unbolded Hebrew. This is a commentary on the Megillat Tanit, which is normally included with the Megillat Tanit, which if you want to impress your friends, it's called the Skolion to Megillat Tanit. Skolion just means commentary, as far as I know. It's in Hebrew and it explains the backstory of why that particular day is forbidden to fast. So that's really, it just has some fun stories. You'll see that the actual Megillat Tanit just translates on Safaria, but the Skolion is not. This mentions things like Hanukkah and Purim. It has a lot of fun things to say. So there's a bunch of different versions of the Skolion as well. The Megillat Tanit is fairly old and fairly fixed. The Skolion is much more close to medieval and has a lot of variations depending on which version you're looking at. I just want to show you one particularly funny part of the Megillat Tanit, which is this in Adar. Betleisar be Yom Nikanur. The 13th of Adar is Yom Nikanur, which is a day where you're not allowed to fast. We know the 13th of Adar, which is the day before Purim. We know that as the fast of Esther. So yeah, Megillat Tanit is not really operative anymore. We do not normally follow the dates in Megillat Tanit. This is the best example. Literally, the Megillat Tanit says you're not allowed to fast on the fast of Esther, but nonetheless, we fast on the fast of Esther. So there you go. So Nikanor is, by the way, a general that they defeated. So we're celebrating the victory against the general Nicanor, different from the Nicanor I told you about a few last week about who donated the gates in the temple, different Nicanor. Okay, so with that background, this is just the Megillatani. So the Mishnah refers to this text. It seems to be a very well-known text, a very important text if you're trying to do communal. It's like basically your Gabbai guide to a certain extent if you're trying to do communal things during during this period. Okay, and the thing that's interesting about it is, right, the Talmud often has the original sources in Hebrew and the commentary in Aramaic. This is the opposite. The original source is in Hebrew, is in Aramaic, and the commentary is in Hebrew. So that's also kind of interesting. Okay, so this is one of the rare occasions where you'll find Aramaic in the Mishnah because we're quoting Megillat Ta'anit. So it says, Kol hakatuv Megillat Ta'anit dala lemispad. This is in Aramaic right there. Anywhere where it says in Megillat Ta'anit that you're not allowed to have a funeral, lefanav asur la'acharav mutar. That means that the day before, you also shouldn't have a funeral, but the day after, you can. Not totally obvious why what this principle is, but that's what they're saying. They're saying that they have a tradition about how to understand the Megillat Ta'anit, that if it says you can't do a funeral on that day, you can't do it on the day before either. Rabbi Yossi Omer, lefanav ulacharav asur. Actually, Rabbi Yossi thinks that both the day before and afterwards would also be forbidden. So that's kind of irrelevant to our topic of fasting. It's just brought by the Bible because we want to talk about Megillat Ta'anit. Because now we're going to say, Tzlal hit anabahon, when the Megillat Ta'anit says you're not allowed to fast on that day, lefanav ulacharav mutar. It means that day specifically and not the day before or after, only that day. Rabbi Yossi omer lefanav asur ulacharav mutar. Except Rabbi Yossi, who thinks that he seems to have a more stringent version of this, the day before Megillat Ta'anit, a day that Megillat Ta'anit says you're not allowed to fast, say the 12th of Adar, you also would not be able to declare a fast. But on the 14th, you could. So you'd have to deal with Purim. Not totally obvious what this argument is about. It seems like they just have different traditions as to how they should implement the rules laid down in Megillat Ta'anit. But they certainly know that the rules in Megillat Ta'anit are ironclad and need to be followed, which is not true today, as you can see from Yom Nicanor. Now we're going to have some other principles about how you should declare communal fasts. I think you saw this earlier in the week with Yael when I wasn't here. The Monday, Thursday structure of the fasts. The fact that they never fast it in consecutive days, they only fast on Monday, Thursday. I think the main reason is probably because, number one, the Torah was read on those days anyway, though that's in some ways just a subset of the main reason, which is that Monday and Thursday are the market days, where everyone would go to the towns. Everyone from the surrounding areas would go to the towns for market. So it's just the time where everyone was together, the time where most people would be in your town. And that's also why they read the Torah on those days, because most people are already there. So this is now explaining that you have to start your cycle of fast. You can't start your cycle of fast on Thursday. It can't be Thursday, Monday, Thursday. It has to be Monday, Thursday, Monday. And that's what this Mishnah explains. Ein gozrin ta'anit al hatzibur batchila b'chamishi shelo lahafkiya ha'sharim ela shnosh taniyot harishnot sheni b'chamishi v'sheni v'shlosh shniyot chamishi sheni b'chamishi. But you don't decree a fast on the community to start on Thursday, on the fifth day of the week, chalolav kiyah sha'arim, to not upset the market. Sha'arim literally gates, but here it means the market's prices. Yeah, sha'arim also can mean the price of an item in Mishnah. So yeah, they don't want to upset the market. There's a bunch of ways one could understand this. I'm going to give you what I think is the simplest explanation, but there are many other ideas in the commentaries. I think basically the point is, as soon as the shops hear that there's going to be a fast, they are going to raise their prices because they know that people need to get their food now before the fast comes along. And so therefore, you're trying to avoid the scenario where the price of food goes way up just before Shabbat, where people actually need to go get food. Right? If the prices go up on Monday, you can get a small amount of food on Sunday, you get a small amount of food on Tuesday, whatever. It's not such a big deal. I remember the shops are closed on some of the fasts, if you remember from chapter one, until the evening. And also on Thursday, they were open because they you have to be able to buy stuff for Shabbat. So it's basically like you're trying to avoid the scenario where all the prices skyrocket on Shabbat. You'd rather the prices go up on Monday and then give time for the markets to settle a little bit. and or give time for the court to step in and actually set the prices to stop the price gouging. So I think that seems to be the simplest explanation. The point is that you're trying to avoid people spending too much money on food and people taking advantage of people who need food just before Shabbat. So therefore, you instead do the first set of three fasts on Monday, Thursday, Monday, and then the second set of three fasts you can do if there's still no rain, you would then do the Thursday, Monday, Thursday. That's their schema, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Thursday. Just continue along without a gap. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Kashem She'en HaRishonot B'Chamishi, Kach Lo Shniot, B'Lo Achronot. Actually, no, Rabbi Yossi thinks that none of the cycles of fast can start on Thursday. He thinks that all the cycles of fast have to start on Monday, not the second cycle and the last cycle, they all have to start on the Monday. Possible, in other words, you'd have a situation where you'd have Monday, Thursday, Monday, nothing on Thursday, and then Monday, Thursday, Monday. Seems to me the point is that he is worried about this upsetting of the markets every time you declare a new set of fasts, and therefore he'd rather the fast start on Monday, so the upset of the market isn't such a big deal. Whereas the majority opinion seems to figure that, like, oh, come on, you already had three fasts. The next three fasts you probably know are coming, that markets are not going to upset in the same way. And therefore, it doesn't matter if you start the fast on a Thursday. That concern is not there. Rabbi Yossi seems to think that concern. So this is, again, just sort of narrowing down the sort of parameters around which, around how one can declare communal fasts. Key principle here, start on Monday in order to not take advantage of people who are trying to buy food for Shabbat. Some more rules about when you can start fasts. Ein gozrin ta'anit al hatzibor b'rosh chodesh b'chanukah u'v'purim. They don't decree fasts on the community on the new moons or Hanukkah or Purim. Why these three specific holidays? Presumably because the fasts for drought are happening between Mar Cheshvan and Nisan. And the only holidays between Mar Cheshvan and Nisan are Rosh Chodesh, Hanukkah, and Purim. So yeah, so it seems to me that the only reason they reference these three festivals specifically is because these three festivals are actually going to happen during the time period of the fast between Mar Cheshvan and Nisan. They certainly would think that you would not declare fast on other holidays, like, you know, Pesach. You shouldn't start a fast during Pesach. It also doesn't seem right. But it's just much more unlikely to happen because it's not about the drought. So you shouldn't do it on these days. These days are already, they're fun days. They should be happy days. No reason to start a fast on those days. You can just wait until it's over. So this is presumably if the Rosh Chodesh or Purim or falls on a Monday or a Thursday or a Hanukkah, the Monday and Thursday of Hanukkah, that's the problem here. If they began a fast before Hanukkah, so say for example, you started your fast in Mar Cheshvan, the end of Mar Cheshvan, and one of the Mondays or Thursdays happened to be Rosh Chodesh Kislev. Ein mafzikin, says Rabban Gamliel, you don't stop the fast, you don't interrupt the fast. You continue the fast during those times. So you can't start your cycle of fasts on Rosh Chodesh. You can't be, the first Monday is Rosh Chodesh, let's start there. But once you've already started, you're already in a cycle of Monday, Thursday, Monday, or Thursday, Monday, Thursday, then you don't interrupt your cycle based on what's going on in the calendar. That's what he's trying to say. Seems to be about you don't want to sort of set up a situation where you're undercutting these happy days with fasting. But if it turns out that sort of like, the calendar fell out in a certain way and then this happens, okay, fine, it happened. What are you going to do? Amar Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir has a caveat on Rabban Gamliel. Af al pi she'amar Rabban Gamliel ein mafzikin, modeh haya she'ein mashlimin. Rabban Gamliel, that's right. Rabban Gamliel said that you don't interrupt your cycle of fast, that is 100% true, but you certainly also, he agrees, Rabban Gamliel agrees, that you don't complete the fast on those days. So if the Monday or Thursday happens to hit Rosh Chodesh or Hanukkah or Purim, then you wouldn't fast the whole day. You would fast until, you know, the afternoon or something, and then you'd break it early. In other words, the happiness of those days doesn't totally override well, sorry, the happiness of those days can a little bit override the fasting prohibitions. We saw this concept of not completing the fast, of ending it early, with regard to the Mishmar and the Beit Av, the people who are in sort of doing their temple service. So a similar kind of principle that he's applying to when the fasts fall on otherwise happy days. You can fast for the most of the day, but you don't have to do the entire day. This is our first mention in the Masechet of what we would call a fast day, of a calendrical fast day. So too with the ninth of Av that fell on Friday, what it seems to be saying is you don't mashlim in, you don't complete the fast. You end the fast before Shabbat starts. Now, there's a couple of things about that, which is that number one, it's actually impossible in our calendar, fixed as it is, for Tisha B'Av to fall on a Friday. It never happens, so this is a bit moot. But even if it did happen, it turns out that Rabbi Meir, according to the way the halakha fell out, is wrong. And in fact, you would fast right it up until Erev Shabbat, according to halakha, according to Rambam, etc. But it never happens. So we're, the days of worrying about Tisha B'Av falling on Friday are over. So that's a whole bunch of other restrictions about how the fasts interact with otherwise happy days. And this, again, I think gets back to the sort of core tension that we've seen a few times, which is the tension between calendrical fixity. I don't know what the English word is. English is not my strong suit, despite the accent. And sort of flexible responses to circumstances. So this is the interaction between the flexible fasts responding to the circumstances of drought and the fixed calendrical dates. What happens if those flexible fasts fall on fixed calendrical happy days? Yeah, the distinction between mafsikin and mashlimin, Maxine. Good question. So the point is that the interruption is about the cycle of fasts. So you don't interrupt your cycle. You might think, Monday, Thursday, Monday. The Thursday is actually Rosh Chodesh. So it's Monday and then Thursday, Rosh Chodesh, and then another Monday. You might think, you know what? You only fast on Monday in that cycle. And once Thursday hits and the Rosh Chodesh happens, you don't continue the fast. The fast cycle is over and that's it. You don't even fast on the following Monday either. Or maybe you fast on the following Monday, but you wouldn't fast on that Thursday because it's Rosh Chodesh. Or Rabbi Gamliel is saying, you don't do that. You continue the cycle of fasts. Mashlimin is about on the day of the fast, the actual day of the fast, do you fast the entire day or do you stop before sunset? You can see that because of this Tisha B'Av thing. The whole point of this is, Tisha B'Av, there's no cycle, there's no like interruption of it. Doesn't make any sense. Tisha B'Av, the whole point is you want to give time before Shabbat where you can like do eating a little bit just to go into Shabbat as a happy rather than angry. Okay, does that make sense? Great. Okay. We'll continue into chapter 3. And again, we're going to sort of talk about some limits on what kinds of fasts you can, when you can institute fasts and for what reasons. We're also going to bring in a bunch of other reasons why one might do a fast. We'll see a whole bunch of other like plagues and various other things that are going to come up in this chapter. That we've said this chapter broadens the topic to include other natural disasters, not just drought. It also introduces this odd term here, which we've seen a little bit, but not a ton, which is matri'in over here, which is to blow the shofar. And it's not totally obvious what matri'in means. So firstly, there's the ambiguity we've already spoken about, which is that it could mean to shout with your voice, or it could mean to blow the shofar. So it could be like sort of a cry out in prayer, or it could be to the shofar blast, or it could be some kind of combination. And the other unclear thing is that there is a shofar involved in the fast days, but only in the last seven. So it could be that matri'in here is code word for you skip the first cycles of fasts and skip directly to the most severe, the last seven fasts, which include the shofar blasts. Or matri'in could be this sort of separate axis of blow the shofar, which is irrespective of whether you're fasting or not. There might be a, and you'll see this sort of comes up differently in different places, there might be a situation where you could blow the shofar but not fast. Maybe you're blowing the shofar as an alarm system rather than a ritual act. Or even if it's a ritual act, there just happens that you're blowing the shofar but not fasting. So it's not totally obvious what it means. I'm not sure it has consistent meaning throughout the chapter. So we'll see how that goes. How can you fast for rain occurring in Tisha B'Av in August? Yes, so that's exactly, so the point here is this is actually not about the rains, the fasting of rain at all. This is just about Tisha B'Av in general. It's just our first glimpse that there are, from our tractate, that there are specific fast days in the calendar. That Tanit hasn't spoken about that at all so far. There is some indication, by the way, in the Tanakh about the four fast days in Zechariah. In the prophet Zechariah, he talks about four fast days in different months. One of them is Av, and etc. That they will become days of rejoicing in the future. But yeah, this is not about the fast for rain. This is the first introduction of calendrical fasts, which are independent of circumstances. You see, the cycle did not work. Well, it depends what you mean by work, Judith. As in, like, it didn't bring the rain. Well, we'll see. We'll talk about Honi later. Honi is a fascinating story, and so we'll see a lot of this. Yes, certainly it's true that you can't claim that the cycles of fast always worked to bring the rain. That is certainly true. We also saw that above in chapter 1, which is to say that we entertained the possibility that rain wouldn't come until Nisan, which would be absolutely terrible for the crops. It would be the worst case scenario. So yeah. Definitely, they're not convinced that this will work. And it's a kind of like water scarcity that's hard for us to imagine, that they're like actually really not sure whether they will have enough water, like year on year. It's actually kind of hard for us. So now we're on to chapter 3. Seder Taniot Elu Ha'amor. So the order of the fast that we just spoke about, right? In other words, the order that we spoke about in chapter 1, chapter 2, all of that. Brevi'ah Rishona. It happens during the first rain. So the first rain, which happens in Mar Cheshvan. So this is where we talked about the different number of words for rain. So Revi'a is another word for rain. It means specifically the first rain of the season, which happens in Mar Cheshvan. So we start this sort of cycle of fasts if the rain doesn't fall in Mar Cheshvan. That's what we're talking about. We're not necessarily talking about this other case, which is Aval Tzmachim Sheshanu Matri'in Aleihem Miyad. But if you had the first rain, that rain was totally fine, and then the crops started sprouting, the Tzmachim, their sprouts, sheshanu, that changed, their opinion became bad, their opinion, appearance became bad, like the crops turned out to be of bad quality from those first rains, then matri'in aleihem miyad, which seems to sound like you skip the first two cycles of fasts and you move directly to the most severe fasts. You don't have to go through the first two sets of three. You go straight away to the last set of seven. Yeah, so this is just like a shortcut, but this is a much more serious situation. The rains actually fell, but the crops didn't actually gain anything from it. They didn't gain enough from it, and the crops are in danger of failing. Okay, you have to jump straight up to the highest level. Whereas if the rain doesn't fall first, there's still a lot of time for the rain to come. It'll be good for the crops. V'chein shepasku g'shamim bein geshem l'geshem arba'im yom, matri'in aleihem miyad, v'pnei shim akapet soret. And the similar scenario is that there's like a distance of 40 days between rain. Then you also jump to the highest level, matri'in aleihem miyad mipnei shehi makat betzorah, because it is basically drought. You're already in the drought if you've waited 40 days since the last rain. Yes, did they have any time where they had severe flooding? Absolutely. This is going to be very important for Choni. You'll see exactly. Honey will argue that you shouldn't fast in those circumstances, but you'll see. So this is just like, yeah, the sort of slow ramp up that we saw in chapter 1, that's for when the rain doesn't fall in Mar Cheshvan. But if the rain did fall in Mar Cheshvan, but it wasn't good for the crops, or you've waited 40 days since the last rain, then you don't go through all of that slow build up. You just go straight to the most severe cases. And then similarly, Yardu latzmachin, aval lo yardu la'ilan, la'ilan velo latzmachim, lazer v'lazer, aval lo laborot la'shichin v'lamarot, matri'in alein miyad. Similarly, if there was enough rain that fell that was good for sprouts, for tzmachin, but not, it didn't fall for trees, it wasn't the right kind of rain for trees, or it was the right kind of rain for trees, but not the right kind of rain for the crops, for the sprouts, Or it was the right kind of rain for trees and sprouts, but it wasn't enough rain to fill the cisterns and the ditches and the caves. And it wasn't enough to fill up the reservoirs of water that we use throughout the year. Then in those circumstances also, you jump directly to the most severe fast. So this is the wrong kind of rain. It very rarely snows in the UK. And there's a joke goes around about how the trains can't run because it's the wrong kind of snow, which is totally not clear what that means. But nonetheless, this is actually the wrong kind of rain. What they're talking about is there are some rains which are going to be good for the crops, and you'll guarantee will be good for people. That's the kind of rain which waters the crops, waters the trees, and fills up your cisterns and all your reservoirs. But if it doesn't do any of those things, you skip straight to the highest level of fasting because it's a serious emergency. So this is somewhat true today, even though it's less impactful in many ways. You can really see then thinking about how flexible is this set of ritual structure. We had this sort of slow build-up over months, but in certain circumstances, you forget about the build-up, you go straight to the most severe fast, you get everyone out into the streets, into the town square with ashes, and you have the 24 brachot, etc. Okay, great. I will see you on Monday, and we will continue on. Shabbat shalom.